The question which comes first, society or the individual, is like the question about the hen and the egg, whether you treat it as a logical or as a historical question. You can make no statement about it, one way or the other, which does not have to be corrected by an opposite and equally one-sided statement. Society and the individual are inseparable. They are necessary and complementary to each other, not opposites. No man is an island entire of itself. In Donne's famous words, every man is a piece of the continent. That is an aspect of the truth. On the other hand, take the dictum of J.S. Mill, the classical individualist. Men are not, when brought together, converted into another kind of substance. Of course not. But the fallacy is to suppose that they existed or had any kind of substance before being brought together. As soon as we are born, the world gets to work on us and transforms us from merely biological into social units. Every human being at every stage of history or prehistory is born into a society and from his earliest years is molded by that society. The language which he speaks is not an individual inheritance, but a social acquisition from the group in which he grows up. Both language and environment help to determine the character of his thought. His earliest ideas come to him from others. As has been well said, the individual apart from society would be both speechless and mindless. The lasting fascination of the Robinson Crusoe myth is due to its attempt to imagine an individual independent of society. The attempt breaks down. Robinson is not an abstract individual, but an Englishman from York. He carries his Bible with him and prays to his tribal god. The myth quickly bestows on him his Man Friday, and the building of a new society begins. It is commonly said by anthropologists that primitive man is less individual and more completely molded by his society than civilized man. This contains an element of truth. Simpler societies are more uniform in the sense that they call for and provide opportunities for a far smaller diversity of individual skills and occupations than the more complex and advanced societies. Increasing individualization in this sense is a necessary product of modern advanced society and runs through all its activities from top to bottom. But it would be a serious error to set up an antithesis between this process of individualization and the growing strength and cohesion of society. The development of society and the development of the individual go hand in hand and condition each other. Indeed, what we mean by a complex or advanced society is a society in which the interdependence of individuals on one another has assumed advanced, complex forms. It would be dangerous to assume that the power of a modern national community to mold the character and thought of its individual members and to produce a certain degree of conformity and uniformity among them is any less than that of a primitive tribal community. The old conception of national character, based on biological differences, has long been exploded. But differences of national character, arising out of different national backgrounds of society and education, are difficult to deny. There are many differences between, say, Americans, Russians, and Indians. But some, and perhaps the most important, of these differences take the form of different attitudes to social relations between individuals, or, in other words, to the way in which society should be constituted. For this reason, the study of differences between American, Russian, and Indian society as a whole may well turn out to be the best way of studying differences between individual Americans, Russians, and Indians. Civilized man, like primitive man, is molded by society just as effectively as society is molded by him. You can no more have the egg without the hen than you can have the hen without the egg.